Foundation announcing Kids Count, a state-by-state look at child well-being and juvenile justice reform at aecf.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, our monthly look at diet and nutrition. This month, our guest is registered dietitian and award-winning health and medical journalist Anne M. Fletcher. A former editor and writer of the Tufts University Health and Nutrition Letter, Fletcher has been working recently with teens on weight issues. Her interest in teens and diet and nutrition was sparked by her son, Wes. He had gained weight, and when he'd try to cut back on what he was eating, peers, who could eat whatever they wanted without gaining weight, made fun of him. Then one day at a summer camp, in the cafeteria line, the boy in front of him ordered Diet Pop and dressing for his salad on the side. They started talking. The boy in front of Wes had lost 40 pounds, and he was determined to keep it off. The boy shared some tips, including this. Kids are less likely to make fun of you if you drink Fresca, since the word diet isn't in its name. When Wes told his mother that story, it led her to wonder what teens could tell their parents about weight loss and what they could tell one another about weight loss. So Mom got to work. Anne Fletcher is the author most recently of Weight Loss Confidential, How Teens Lose Weight and Keep It Off and What They Wish Parents Knew, and the companion book Weight Loss Confidential Journal, Week-by-Week Success Strategies for Teens from Teens. The books are published by Houghton Mifflin. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions and comments for Anne Fletcher. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Anne Fletcher's previous books include Thin for Life and Sober for Good. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Anne Fletcher, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Good to be with you, Celeste.
So what was the turning point for your son, Wes?
Well, it really was, you know, let me correct one thing. I don't work with kids. I don't work with teens. I'm
okay.
Really an observer, studier of people who change. And it really goes back many years to more than 15 years ago that it all started with my studying adults who've lost weight and kept it off. What fascinates me is people who not only change in the first place, but people who are able to sustain change, able to maintain that change. And as you mentioned, the Thin for Life, I've written a series of books about adults who lost weight and kept it off. Thin for Life first came out more than 15 years ago. There's been a revised edition since then, but there's a series of books, the Thin for Life books, about adults who've lost weight and kept it off. And when you look at people who have been able to change, it's not just one thing. There's not just one turning point. It's usually an accumulation of things that spur them to change. For Wes, that kind of the initial trigger that really got him thinking and giving him confidence and really that initial trigger, the initial turning point, but there were many along the way, was meeting that boy that you talked about. Because he thought, you know, if this boy was, well, one thing that you didn't share, one part of that story was he looked at the boy and noticed that this boy was going through the cafeteria line getting diet Diet Coke, getting salad dressing, getting a salad with dressing on the side. And he looked at the boy who was thin, and here's my son who was overweight. And Wes grew up in a family with a dietitian who was writing weight loss books, and he knew the things he was supposed to be doing. And he looked at that kid and said, "Why are you doing that? You're thin." And the boy goes, "Oh, yeah?" And he pulls out a picture of himself at least 40 pounds heavier, and he said, "Everybody else in my family eats like a slob, and I don't want to look like them." And Wes and the boy sat down and started trading kind of weight loss tips. And it was the first time Wes had ever, you know, that's not guy talk. That's not the stuff that guys are supposed to be talking about, especially when you're 13 or 14. And Wes said to me when I interviewed him for the book, and Wes now has lost, well, when I wrote the book, it was 60, 65 pounds. He's now in his 20s, and he's lost even more weight. He's kept off 80-some pounds for about 7 years now. And when I interviewed him for the book, he said, "You know, when I met that kid, it said to me, if that boy growing up in a family with all those negative influences could do it, I can do it too." And that was when I first got the idea for the book. I thought, you know, kids don't necessarily listen to their own parents, even when their parents are weight experts. They don't necessarily listen to their pediatricians, people in white lab coats. They listen to other kids. They're motivated by their peers, teenagers in particular. And that's when I started collecting teens, getting the idea that what a great idea for a book, teens helping other teens with weight loss. So I went out and found more than 100 teens who were seriously overweight. These were not kids who wanted to lose 5 pounds to look good for the prom. These were kids who had serious weight problems, who had lost weight in healthy ways. That was key. They had to have lost weight in a healthy way to be part of Weight Loss Confidential. And had kept it off for about a year or more. So anyway, that was the initial trigger. He didn't lose the weight right at that point in time. He tried a number of times to lose the weight. He did have some success, but then he gained it back, as most people do when they struggle with their weight. When he really lost the weight for good, he was in 11th grade. That first incident that you talked about was when he was 13 or 14. When he really lost the weight for good, he was in 11th grade, and his weight got all the way up to about 270 pounds. He's tall. He's a huge boned person. He was about 6'1 at the time. He's now 6'2, but he was still medically obese. His weight was very unhealthy, and he decided he didn't want to go to college overweight. He was going to college near the beach, and like most teens, he wanted to look good for girls. He wanted to look good in a bathing suit, and that's what spurred him to lose the weight.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of these teens, they had to try a couple of times before.
As adults, yeah. You know, it's with any behavior, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to lose weight, and it takes multiple tries, and it was the same way with adults.
Yeah. Had the two of you talked about his gaining weight prior to that summer? How had those conversations gone?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know, we had talked about it. He often, not often, but a number of times he had come to me and he wanted me to do it for him. You know, there were those conversations where, well, I tell some kind of funny stories in the book where, you know, we talked about the I'm going to eat whatever mom eat. I'm not overweight, but I have to watch my weight. I mean, we have heavy people on both sides of the family, and Wes seems to have acquired those genes. My husband and I both have always exercised. We have to watch what we eat or we gain weight. But I've never been seriously overweight. And I joke in the book about the I'm going to eat like mom diet. And when I pointed out, you know, that he doesn't like anything green, or he didn't at the time, you know, he didn't like vegetables and salads and that sort of thing. That diet kind of went by the wayside. And, you know, I used to say to him, I will help you, I'll help you, but I'm not going to do it for you. And, you know, that often happens with people. They want somebody to tell me what to do. And ultimately, one of the messages I heard from both adults and teens who lost the weight is that ultimately, you know, you have to want to do it for yourself, and you really have to take charge. You can get help from somebody else. But the other thing, too, is, you know, I wasn't always a perfect parent. My husband wasn't always a perfect parent. And one of the things that I learned, and not only did I talk to the teens, and each of these teens, believe it or not, completed an 8-page survey. When I write a book like this, not only do I go to the success stories, the teens or the adults who've lost weight, They complete a survey for me about their weight history, the turning point, how they did it, how they keep it off. The teens completed this 8-page questionnaire. I talk to leading experts in the field. I go to the scientific studies about to look at what works from a scientific standpoint. But I also talked to many of the parents, and the parents also had a questionnaire that they completed. But anyway, one of my some of the experts I talked to couldn't believe that I got that many teenagers to complete an 8-page questionnaire. One of the overriding messages from the parents, and one of the things that I learned the hard way as a parent, is that, you know, you really can't make a teenager do anything. The teenager really has to want it. And you really, you know, you have to get off the teenager's back, even subtle comments like, don't you think you've had enough, or why don't you order this instead of that, or, you know, it's really up to the teenager to decide if, when, where, and how to lose weight.
Yeah. So when Wes had this turning point, what kind of support did he want from you then, and what didn't he want from you?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't even know that he was losing weight. I mean, that he had made the decision.
Ah.
He's a very independent kind of person. He still is to this day. And I just noticed that he was getting thinner. And I looked at him and said, you know, you losing weight? And he is a very mathematically oriented person. And he told me that he had taken one of the calorie counting books from my office. I mean, you know, I'm a dietitian. I have my office is filled with all kinds of books and, you know, aids that would help anybody lose weight. I use them for research in my projects. And he was using one of my calorie counting books, and he was eating what all the other kids his age eat. He was still eating fast food. He was just eating half as much. And he was counting calories. And the other thing is that because he had failed before, he didn't want to, you know, he was worried about failing again. So he was counting calories and losing weight, and that's how he was doing it. He was just kind of doing it quietly on his own. But, you know, I want to stress that the book is not, it's not about Wes. I mean, his story is in there. And, you know, I thought it was important for me to share that as a parent. But really the story in all of my books, it's the idea is that, you know, we look at the common threads and people who overcame their problem in many different ways. I tell the stories of lots of different teens, and the idea is when somebody loses weight, you know, people do it in many different ways, and the idea is to help people find an approach that's right for them. Because ultimately, when people change, it's a highly individual process. And what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. I found that about half of the teens lost weight with some kind of help. They went to a children's weight loss program, and the book is filled with resources. I have a whole section where I talk about children's weight loss programs, teen weight programs, but some of them went to adult weight programs like Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, and I talk about what can you expect if you go to a program like that or if you take your kid to a program like that. So about half, some of them went to a registered dietitian or a physician, and then the other half did it on their own. But again, they had to have lost weight in a healthy way to participate in the book.
Yeah. Well, another one of the people who's in the book is a girl by the name of Sandra D. Quite a self-directed young woman.
Yes, she was quite amazing, wasn't she?
And
she went to a summer weight camp, one of those summer weight camps that you often hear about.
Yeah, and so she set some pretty amazing goals. How did she set these goals, and how did she do it? And maybe you could be a little brief here, because now we've got a listener who would like to talk with you. So.
Okay. Well, you know, what I do in each chapter is I tell the story of somebody who really captures the point that is, you know, trying to get across in that chapter. And she really, I thought she beautifully illustrated the point about, you know, talking about being realistic. Being realistic about setting realistic goals for yourself, having a realistic body image. You know, I mentioned that most of these children were, these teens were seriously overweight. And although many of them got down to what would be considered a healthy body weight, some of them, most of them, many of them don't look like the kinds of models that we see held up before adults and children on TV all the time. And a lot of the kids talked about how you accept that you're not going to look like the people you see on TV. And I think that's such an important message to get across to teenagers, because how do you accept the fact that you're not going to have a body that looks like a fashion model, basically? And she really talked about that in such a healthy way. And I think that's such an important message to get across to teenagers, especially if they've been struggling with being overweight for a long time.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian and health and medical journalist Anne Fletcher. She is the author most recently of Weight Loss Confidential, How Teens Lose Weight and Keep It Off and What They Wish Parents Knew. She's also the author of Thin for Life, and Sober for Good. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now, a listener in Charleston on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello. First of all, I'd just say I just really enjoy your show, Celeste, and I've wanted to call on certain occasions, but I decided to today. I guess what I have to say is more of a statement than a question. It's interesting that we in America, in this Western culture of ours, have such an ambivalent relationship to food. You know, the fast food nation we are, you know, and everybody's eating on the go all the time with their cell phones in one hand, food in the other, in their cars, you know, and so forth. What do you have to say about, you know, how we as Americans have a relationship to our food? And how does your program address that rather unique relationship that Westerners, i.e. Americans, have towards food? And how do you address the fast food problem that we have, especially with kids? Thank you. I'll go ahead and listen.
Okay.
Well, you know, that again, you know, that looking from the perspective of this book that I've written, you know, that's certainly an issue that's really pressing for teenagers, because it's, you know, it's the culture of adolescence. I mean, one of the points that I often make is that it's really hard for an adult to lose weight. I think in some ways it's doubly hard for a teenager, because and I'll come back to this issue of fast food, but in the first place, adolescents are, although adults might talk about other adults behind their backs in terms of their appearance, getting back to that issue I was talking about before about body image and whatnot, teenagers make fun of each other right to their faces. I have a 15-year-old daughter, and she was talking the other day about somebody, an overweight girl, wore a very provocative outfit to school the other day, and people came right up to her and said, "How could you wear that outfit to school when you're so fat?" I mean, teens are just out there with making comments, and so it's really hard. So anyway, but getting back to the issue of fat food, you made me think about this whole thing about why it's really doubly hard for teenagers to lose weight. That's one issue. Another is that the peer culture of adolescence is one of unhealthy food. It is not cool, as I talked about earlier with my son, it's not cool to eat healthy food. It's not cool to be watching your weight, especially if you're a guy. And the peer culture of adolescence is fast food, unhealthy food. I remember my son saying, you know, it's not cool to go into a McDonald's and order a salad. Some of the boys in my book said that they were made fun of if they ordered a diet soda. They were called girls if they ordered a diet soda. And, you know, what I try to do in the book, though, is the advice isn't supposed to come from me. I'm a dietitian. Teenagers don't want to hear from adults. They want to hear from other teens. So I let it come from the voices of the teens. There's one chapter where a lot of the advice comes from the parents, because I wanted parent-to-parent advice. So there's one chapter where I talk about where the parents are giving advice for the, you know, and their advice is let the teens take the lead. But there's a whole chapter in the book about where the teenagers talk about how they eat now that they've lost the weight. And there's a whole section about how they've cut back on fast food, because that was one of their 10 keys to eating success now that they've lost the weight. But they haven't necessarily given up fast food completely, because they, they want to be like their friends. Excuse me, I'm dealing with a little bit of a cough.
God bless
Sorry about
you.
That. And they want to be like their friends. I know one girl said, you know, when she goes into a fast food restaurant, she gets a kid's meal because that's enough food for her. She's learned to eat less. Or instead of a large fry, they get a small fry. So they give their tips for how to eat in fast food restaurants rather than me pontificating as an adult.
Hmm. There's all kinds of things here now going on in my brain. Peer culture, teasing and ridicule and bullying. In the book, you have advice that you got from teens.
Yes, yes.
For teens, for those times when
right.
they're made fun of or criticized for being overweight and or for working on weight loss.
Right.
What a catch-22. You're criticized for being overweight, and then you're criticized for ordering a salad.
It really is.
It's kind of
really
screwy.
It's such a difficult time of life.
So what did they say?
Excuse me. That was one of the things that I asked them was how were you treated when you were overweight? And most of them, their stories, I mean, some of their stories just brought tears to my eyes. Most of them were tormented by their peers. One of them, Georgie W., a female, said that she was chased by her, she said her life was, her childhood was miserable before she lost 100 pounds. She said that kids would chase her around the playground yelling, "Run, fatso, run." She was harassed over the phone and over the internet. It was just really heartbreaking. And I have a whole section where they kind of share their tips and their advice, and different kids say different things. I mean, different, you know, there's no one right way, no one right answer. They kind of share their advice. I think one of the things that parents can do, and one of the things that I think is really helpful is, I think one of the things that's really interesting to me is looking at the kids. There was a handful of kids who were not teased, and one of those was my son. He was not teased much at all about his weight. And why is that? And we don't really know. There's not a lot of research on, you know, kids who are overweight and who's teased and who isn't. I can give a guess. When I talked to my son about it, and we talked at length about this when I was writing the book, and this is now after he's lost the weight, and I talked with an expert, Dr. Sylvia Rim, about this too, because she wrote a whole book called Saving the Lives of Overweight Children. Have you ever interviewed her?
No.
And we talked about this, and I would agree with her that one of the things that parents can do if you have a child with any kind of a shortcoming and you know, being overweight, we could consider, you know, is something that gets in the way of kids because kids give them other kids such a hard time about it, is to help build their strength and help them feel good about themselves in other ways. And with Wes, even though, I mean, sure, it was hard for me. Here I am, a weight expert. I'm a nutrition expert, and I have an overweight child. But we tried, and I heard this over and over from other parents in the book, don't let weight be the focus of your relationship. Let that child know that he or she is loved unconditionally. And so often, because weight and appearance is such an overriding theme in our culture, don't talk about it. Try to, you know, just don't let that be a focus. Don't let it be a topic of conversation. Don't talk about your weight. Don't talk about other people's weight and appearance. Don't comment about it when you see it on TV. Let that child know that he or she is loved unconditionally. Help him or her feel good about himself in other ways. And even though we were terribly concerned about Wes's weight, we knew that it undermined his self-esteem. Although it didn't seem to bother him terribly, we tried not to make it a big focus of things, and he was a really good student. He actually was quite good in sports until he became very, very heavy, but he was very good at strong academically, and he was a star on the debate team. He actually took second in the state debate championship, and we really tried to nurture and encourage those other things in his life that made him feel really good about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to this day that he feels, and Dr. Sylvia Rim, when I interviewed her, and I would agree with this, said if you really can strengthen the child and help him or her and empower them in other ways, ultimately it should help empower them and make them able to tackle other problems in their lives. Now, there are no guarantees here, but I believe that that was something that gave Wes, and he feels, gave him the confidence ultimately to tackle his weight problem. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, help that child feel good in every way.
Yeah. Now, also in the book, and I thought this was interesting as well, because here, you know, it depends on the situation, and I think we have to listen to one another. But a child might bring up the topic and say, you know, I don't feel so good about the way I look.
Yes, yes.
And you quote a psychologist who says her advice was, you know, don't launch into telling them that they look great. They look better than their
Dr.
friends.
Dr. Carrie Botell,
yeah,
yes.
That, that they're beautiful on the inside, so on and so forth. She said, you know, when a child comes to you and tells you something like that, it's time to listen and listen to their concerns.
Yes.
So
yes.
When they bring up the topic, go for it, right?
That's right.
But
that's
listen,
right.
Listening is the key here, I think.
I think it's so important with an adolescent. Yeah, I kind of stepped back when the book was done, and we kind of came up with, my publisher, my editor, and I came up with kind of 10 things teens wish parents knew, kind of distilling the information, and that was right at the top of the list. And this was talking to the teens and talking to the parents. And that was that, don't tell me my weight is okay. If your teen is overweight and says he wants to slim down, listen to his concerns. Offer to help find some solutions. Don't minimize the problem. That doesn't mean jump right in and say, I've got the answer. Let's go to Weight Watchers. But listen, how can I help you? Would you like me to help you? I guess would be the first question, because, you know, sometimes they don't want you to jump in. And so I know with my 15-year-old daughter, when she's having a problem with her friends, she doesn't necessarily want me to solve it. She just wants my ear. She just wants to vent. And then you can say at the end, do you want my advice? Do you want me to help? How can I help you? And then if they want, you know, one of my favorite stories in the book was a mom who had a daughter who you know, she was very concerned about her weight, and she was just kind of waiting for the right moment. And sometimes that's what you have to do. And that's one of the hardest things as a parent is, you know, you have to, you can't do this for the teen. And I think, as I recall, the father was often on the girl's back, and it just backfires when you're nagging, preaching, complaining. And the mother was waiting for the right moment, and she had been shopping, clothes shopping, with the daughter. And the mother did not harangue and harass the daughter at all. And they had been clothes shopping, and she could see how miserable the daughter was as they were trying on clothes, and nothing seemed to fit. And the mother didn't say a word until that night when she was tucking her daughter into bed. And she said, honey, I noticed you seemed really unhappy today when you were trying on clothes. And the daughter said, oh, I was. And the mom said, was it because of your weight? And that opened up the door. And the daughter started talking, and the mom said, and the daughter admitted that was why she was unhappy. And the mom said, would you like some help? And the daughter said, yes. And then the mom said, well, you know, we had that friend who went to Weight Watchers, and she lost all that weight. And the daughter said, yeah. And the mom said, would you like to check it out with me? And the daughter said yes. And so that, you know, and then they went together. Then the mother wasn't even overweight, but they went together for a year. And that was the way that she approached it, but she waited for the right moment. She waited for the right opening.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Today, our monthly look at diet and nutrition. This month, our guest is registered dietitian and award-winning health and medical journalist Anne M. Fletcher. She is the author most recently of Weight Loss Confidential, How Teens Lose Weight and Keep It Off, and What They Wish Parents Knew, and the companion book Weight Loss Confidential Journal, Week-by-Week Success Strategies for Teens from Teens. Anne Fletcher's previous books include Thin for Life and Sober for Good. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Chicago. Line 4, hi.
Being strategically involved with health and weight and so forth, but being tactful in relation to how we approach the situation, regardless if it's teens, babies, or even adults, we have to recognize health-wise that there's an epidemic of obesity in the country that is the most in the entire world, as far as we understand. And what I'm getting at is rather than waiting for the situation to get out of hand, the parent has to take a more guiding role rather than being waiting for the situation or the weight problem to get out of hand. And we see the babies and the teenagers and adults as well just eating like there's no end in sight. And what I'm further getting at is if they could be impart the consequences of this obesity, a more direct warning about the health problems that are may befall them, as well as in the future, because the heart, the diabetes, and all other kind of consequences are imminent if they don't get the message. So it's one thing to develop a tactful approach on the matter, but just like in cigarette smoking, they have a warning label on the packages, you know, and they have the sugar and food analysis on the back of a lot of the food and salt drinks and so forth. But many of them aren't aware on how to read those labels to interpret them. So I thank you for your information and foresight. So I just make a comment like that. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Ann Fletcher, you want to respond?
Yeah, thank you for the comment. And you know, he's right. We are seeing health problems, the likes of which we've never seen before in young people today. I mean, type 2 diabetes, you know, which we used to call adult-onset diabetes. We're seeing high blood pressure, heart problems, sleep apnea. We never saw these problems in children before, and they're weight-related. One of the problems is, unfortunately, teenagers aren't terribly motivated by health messages. They're more motivated by connecting it to how they feel about themselves, connecting it with appearance, connecting it with, you know, the messages with relationships. And yeah, some health messages work for teens, but in terms of if we can get the message out to parents and working with kids at a younger age, parents have more control if we can make these changes in the home at a younger age, and I think that might be part of what the caller was talking about. Part of what doesn't work is if the parent suddenly, you know, like you have a house full of teenagers and the parent suddenly becomes the food cop and, you know, now we're going to do this and now we're going to, you know, the parent suddenly takes charge. What I think works the best with teenagers is communication. Always involving, you know, talking with the teen and involving the teenager in the decision-making process every step of the way. And one of the most important messages when on the questionnaire, when I ask the parents and when I interview the parents about what are the most important things that, here are the kinds of questions I ask the parents. What helped the most when you were trying to help your overweight teen? What got in the way, what didn't help when you were trying to help your teen, and what advice do you have for parents of other overweight teens? And one of the messages, loud and clear, in addition to some of the things we've already talked about, like get off their backs, nagging, preaching, and complaining don't work, don't be a food cop, one of the messages was you have to be a role model. If you want your teen to live a healthy lifestyle, if you want your teen to be physically active, and we haven't talked at all about exercise.
Yeah, that's really key. So
critical. I mean, that really, if I had to pick one strategy, the number one strategy that these teens use to get the weight off and keep the weight off was physical activity, and we can come back to that. But if you want your teens to be physically active and you want them to eat a healthy diet, then you have to walk the walk and eat the diet along with them. And, you know, I remember one mom who was not overweight. I've seen pictures of her. She's an attractive, slender woman. But she said, you know, we could not expect Richie to lose the weight and eat a healthy diet if I was bringing chips into the house all the time. And if we were sitting in front of the TV every night. We had to do these things along with him if we wanted him to change. And they did. So it's really important to create a healthy food climate for the entire family, not just the overweight teen. You know, what often happens is, and this was the case in my house, my oldest son was obese, overweight, very overweight. My second son doesn't have and to this day, I mean, they're both in their 20s. My second son doesn't have a speck of fat on his body. But, you know, we're not just talking about weight here. We're talking about health. We have heart disease in our family. It doesn't matter if you're overweight. Heart disease, you know, can still affect you. you know, what you need to provide children with healthy, appealing food choices without making them feel deprived. You know, the other thing we don't want to do is have kids who feel like they can never have a treat, because that just makes them want those foods even more when they go to somebody else's house. And involve them in deciding what foods are going to be, you know, around in the house. Kids like to be involved in, especially when they're younger, in preparing the foods and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Let's talk now about physical activity, because this comes through in so many of these stories of these young people. Physical activity, getting involved in sports, organized sports, or sports just on the pickup. Kids who exercise is just so critical in success.
Well, as with, in, you know, how they lost the weight and how they're keeping it off, as with diet, how they are physically active is a highly individual process. I think actually it's kind of good news that only about 25% of the kids were involved in sports. And I say good news because I think that it's often really uncomfortable for an overweight child to think about joining a sports team. And overweight children are often very self-conscious about how they look when they exercise, about putting on workout clothes. And so, you know, the good news is that it's fine. I mean, there's some overweight kids who are very good athletes. I mentioned that my son was, at least for a while, he was quite good until he was about 13 or 14. He was quite a good athlete. And then he got quite, you know, he got really too heavy to be able to run fast enough to get around the bases. He was a baseball player. But, anyway, I lost my train of thought. The good news is that you don't have to be a jock to be physically active. There's a whole section where the kids kind of talked about how they got started with exercise. And it was different for each kid, but they gave their tips. They talked about how they found the right clothes, how they found the right place to work out, how they, you know, some of them, how they made it more fun, listening to the right music. Some of them worked out with a friend. Some of them worked out with a parent. Some of them just would start out just walking around the neighborhood where they felt a little more comfortable. And once they got a little, like with my own son, he initially, I mean, he was so physically inactive when he was really heavy. And he just, he didn't want to move. He was a real couch potato. He was a debater. That was a very sedentary activity. But after he lost the first 20 pounds, he started to have a little bit more energy. And before I knew it, about four nights a week, I had a whole bunch of teenagers playing pickup basketball in my driveway. So once he had lost a little bit of weight, he started to have more energy. And, you know, it was just a friendly game of basketball going out in the driveway. And it was just fun. It was nothing formal, just a good time. So, you know, but when I asked the kids, you know, what were the top three things you did to lose weight, far ahead of anything else that these kids did, whether it was count calories, go on a diet, far ahead of everything else was exercise, becoming more physically active. And it was the number one way they're keeping the weight off, too.
Let's take another call. A listener in Savoy on line one. Hi.
Hello. I'm a physical educator, and I think one of the big issues involved with the physical activity is changing the whole paradigm of the physical education culture. Switching from the competitive sports to more of a fitness-based curriculum. And I actually did my student teaching in Naperville, where they have a program called PE for Life. And they use heart rate monitors a lot. And it was a really, really enriching experience for me, because you had the overweight kids that were kind of self-conscious and didn't want to run, but they were walking or just involving themselves in the class quite a bit. And then you have the athletic kids who are jogging but still running circles around the rest of the class. And when you got the results from the heart rate monitors back, you found out that the overweight kids were actually spending the majority of the time in the class within their heart rate zone, and the athletic kids were below their zone because they weren't training at the level that they needed to be. So not only was it beneficial for me as a teacher, because I could give praise instead of criticism, which in the past, if you saw a kid walking, you would be tending more towards telling them to get their butt in motion and get it moving, where they were actually spending time in the zone, so they're doing a good job. And in the past, also, these athletic kids thought they were doing a good job, but they weren't getting the correct amount of exercise or the correct amount of intensity.
It's so good to hear, because I was one of those kids who was walking always, because I just wasn't naturally athletic. It's so good that we're moving in that direction. We're really individualizing, it sounds like, our approach to physical education.
Right, and I was just kind of wondering what you thought about that.
Well, you're the expert there, not me. I'm not an expert on physical education. It sounds terrific. I think that's definitely the way to go. I love that idea of physical education for life. I live in a university town in southern Minnesota, and I still see so much emphasis on sports. And, you know, one of the things that I really have such an issue with is the lack of physical activity after school. You know, it's like all or nothing. It's sports or nothing, and a lot of it is tied to lack of funding. That you're either an athlete, or like I hate this. It makes you sound old, but when I was a girl, you know, we used to have extramurals and intramurals, and you know, there's nothing for kids who want to just have fun. You're either an athlete where you're committed to be on that kind of fanatic sport team every single day of the week for hours and hours, and sometimes it's before school and after school. And there's nothing for the kid who just wants to have an hour of exercise a day. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing any kind of movement toward finding ways for kids to be physically active that's not the real highly competitive sport experience?
Yeah, let's go back now to that caller on line one. Oh, he's rung off.
Did we lose him?
Yeah, he said goodbye.
We really need to find ways for kids to be active in that way, and they just don't seem to be out there, especially for teenagers.
Yeah. Well, I recall being in high school, and some parts of PE I loved, and others I abhorred. And it seemed to me, like you were saying, it was either all or nothing. And I thought, at the time, I thought, why can't we have some other kinds of sports for those of us who, you know?
Well, the other thing, too, is there's actually been some research studies where they researchers will go in and they actually observe kids and they measure, they look at the actual amount of physical activity kids are getting in physical education classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, the amount of physical activity that they're actually getting is very minimal. I know my 15-year-old daughter says, I never break a sweat in gym class. you know, by the time they get in there and they change and, you know, part of it is, again, the constraints of the time and lack of funding, and so many schools have had to cut back on it. And we do have, and the school can't do everything. We can't lay it all on the school either. We got a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now let's talk about it. We're running down on time, and I want you to talk with us about what teens want other teens to know. What are the top things?
What teens want other teens to know? Well, first of all, that you can lose weight in a healthy way. You know, so often we hear about teens dieting in unhealthy ways,
mm-hmm.
and these are and the truth is that those unhealthy ways of dieting often backfire, and in fact, teens end up, when they skip meals and they go on crazy far out diets, they actually end up gaining more weight in the long run. And so, it's really important for teens to know that healthy weight management strategies really do work, and these teens are real role models to show that. So I think that's one of the most important messages of the book.
Yeah. And this goes back to our first caller this afternoon, I do believe. There was an article recently in Newsweek. I think actually it's the current edition of Newsweek. Diet Trick, Stop Eating. And it's about stars and fasting that they do, losing 20 pounds by drinking a mix of water, maple syrup, and lemon. And these detox diets are not a good thing. And you know what? It's not until the very last paragraph of this article that it says detox diets can do more harm than good.
Oh, you know,
they can cause
dehydration through the whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Here we have Kate Moss and Gwyneth and Beyonce, And they're looking good, and they're in the picture, and they have this thing that they do from time to time where they stop eating or whatever. That's goofy.
Right.
And it's not until the end of the article that you get here, you know, this can cause dehydration, malnutrition, dizziness, and irritability. So it's a little crazy. You know, I think the first caller this afternoon, going back to his thoughts, is we have kind of some wacky ideas about diet and nutrition and food.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing is to know that, you know, if you're struggling with your weight, that you're certainly not alone. The bottom line is that there, one out of three kids today has a serious weight problem. Now, I don't know that that offers a tremendous amount of consolation, but know that there are successful people out there, that there really are teenagers who have succeeded. There are happy, healthy kids who have done it, that you don't have to become skinny to succeed, you know, that you can, you don't have to look like a fashion model to be successful, that you can, you know, the teens talk a lot about how, you know, to be comfortable. I talk in the book about a comfortable body weight, setting a comfortable body weight, a weight at which you feel good, given where you've been, that a realistic body image that we talked about in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the things that they said was surround yourself with positive people, recognize how far you've come, think about other attractive people who aren't perfect.
Yes, yes, I love that. One of them talked about, some of them talked about, you know, other, like Queen Latifah, one
yeah.
of them talked about, you know, like other stars
right.
who are, you know, we're seeing, I mean, still we see a lot of very slender, beautiful people in the media, but we're seeing more people today who don't have perfect bodies in the media. And somebody said, well, even look at Reese Witherspoon. You know, she has a big chin, but she's still beautiful. And I just love it when the words come from them. So I think, yeah, that's real, real helpful when they talk about that.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Ann Fletcher, thank you so much.
Well, it was great to be with you.
Ann Fletcher is the author, most recently, of Weight Loss Confidential, How Teens Lose Weight and Keep It Off and What They Wish Parents Knew. And there's a companion book. We didn't talk about this, about the benefit of the benefits of journaling. A companion book, Weight Loss Confidential Journal, Week-by-Week Success Strategies for Teens from Teens. The books are published by Houghton Mifflin. 1:53 Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from Kansas City and Chicago. Here's Todd Gleason.
Let's take a look at those numbers in Chicago on a Monday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit finished the nearby contract 25¾ cents higher. That December futures had 5.76 as its top, the bottom at 32¾, and a settlement price at $5.62. December contract settled 25¾ cents higher in Chicago for the soft red winter wheat. March contract 5.94½, the high, the low at 5.55¼. Settlement price at $5.82½, up 25¾ cents as well. May contract 6.08¼, the high, the low at 5.72¾. Settlement price there $5.96, 25½ cents higher. July futures 6.20¼ on the harvest month high, the low at 5.82½. A settlement price for that 09 contract up 25¾ cents. Settled the July at $6.93, 25¾ cents higher in Chicago. In Kansas City, December wheat settled at 5.97¾, up 24¾ cents for the hard red winter. And the spring contract in Minneapolis at the grain exchange settled the December at 6.65¼, up 17¾ cents. From the corn pit in Chicago, December futures, the lead option and harvest month, 4.18 the high, the low at 3.94½, a settlement price at $4.03, up 1½ cents on the afternoon. March 4.35¼, the high, the low at 12, settlement price at 4.20¾, settlement price up 1½ cents. May futures at 4.46¾ high, low at 4.26½, settlement price at $4.32½, up 1¾ cents. In July corn, 4.58 the high, the low at 34½, settlement price at $4.43½, up 1¾ cents. September corn, 4.67¼ the high, the low at 46, settlement price at 53¼, up 3 cents. And December 09, that's the next year's contract, a 4.79 high, low at 4.55, the harvest month for 2009 settled $4.64 and a quarter, up 3 3/4. December oat futures settlement price up 4.5 cents today, 246 3/4 the high, the low at 229 1/2. Dece oats settled at $2.36, 4.5 higher. Soy complex now, November beans, $9.49 the top, the bottom at $9.12 1/2, a settlement price at $9.28 1/4. Up 3 cents. January futures, $9.57 the high, the low at $9.19 1/4. Settlement price at $9.37 1/2, up 4.5. March contract in the bean pit, $9.68 1/2 the high. Low at $32 1/4. Settlement price at $9.49 1/4 a bushel. That's March contract. Settled 4 cents higher in the May futures, $9.80 the high, the low at $48 1/4. Settlement price at $9.60 3/4, up 4 cents. The November beans for next year, $9.85 the top, the bottom at $9.54 1/4. A settlement price, $9.69 1/2. November 2009 soybeans settled 2.5 cents higher. December bean meal, $280.80 a ton, the top, the bottom at $272.80. Settlement price at $275.20, up $2.20. January futures, a settlement at $277.20, up $2.90 today. December bean oil at $35.77 high, the low at $33.60. Settlement price at $34.74, up $1.14. And the January contract settled $35.22, up $1.14. In just about 9 minutes now, at 6 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, I'll return with the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, when we'll talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Let's find out now what happened today in Chicago with the livestock contracts. December live cattle, 93.80 the high, 92.50 the low, 93.32 1/2 the settlement, that up 62 1/2. February, 95.02 1/2 the high, 93.80 the low, 94.15 the settlement, that down 10. April, 95.70 the high, 94.60 the low, 95.15 the settlement, that up 40. June, 91.70 the high, 90.65 the low, 91.20 the settlement, that up 42 1/2. November feeder cattle, 99.80 the high, 98.85 the low, the settlement, 99.70, that up 107 1/2. January, 99.30 the high, 98.35 the low, 99.17 1/2 the settlement, that up 112 1/2. March, 99.50 the high, 98.55 the low, 99.42 1/2 the settlement, that up 90. April, 99.90 the high, 99.12 1/2 the low, the settlement, 99.75, that up 82 1/2. December lean hogs, 55.20 the high, 54.10 the low, the settlement, 54.40, that down 40. February, 63 even the high, 61.65 the low, 61.90 the settlement, that down 107 1/2. April, 70.25 the high, 69.50 the low, 70.15 the settlement, that unchanged. May, 77.07 1/2 the high, 76.60 the low, 77.07 1/2 the settlement, that down 2 1/2. February pork bellies, 85.50 the high, 82.95 the low, the settlement, 83.90, that down 87 1/2. Let's take a look at Wall Street now. The Dow is off 18 points. The NASDAQ is off a fraction. It is up a fraction. The Dow now off 35 at 92.90. The NASDAQ off a fraction at 17.21. The S&P 500 off 6 at 9.63. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon: mostly sunny, highs ranging between 72 and 77. Tonight, mostly clear, lows ranging from 45 in southeastern Indiana to 55 in northwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs ranging between 72 and 77. In Champaign,